everybody. My name is Matt Sakey, and I've only recently discovered there's a whole contingent of the world population that's so used to calling me Steerpike, they're not even aware of the fact that I have the other name, which is actually the one that I use most of the time. So this is Steerpike, coming to you from Tap Repeatedly, one of our rare podcasts that we're recording here. We're joined by Brandon Perdue and Max Boone, also from Tap, and guesting with us today is Christine Chester, who is on loan from our friends at Fanboy Comics.
Hi, hello, everybody.
Really, it has been a long while since we recorded a podcast for Tap. The Last of Us arrived a few weeks ago, and if there's a game that's worth talking about for a while with intelligent people, I think this one probably is it. Christine, you really got this rolling. You emailed me a couple weeks ago. you said, if you happen to be recording a podcast about The Last of Us, I would love to be involved in that, which was awesome because I think that's the only time that you've ever said anything about a podcast that we're recording to me.
So. Well, it came up because Brandon actually and I were talking, and he mentioned about the BioShock Infinite podcast, and unfortunately I didn't get a chance to play that game, so there's no way I could contribute to a discussion. But then after playing The Last of Us, it was a game I really, really wanted to discuss with people and still do. So I wanted to go ahead and make sure if there was something was going to happen, I could be a part of it.
Was there something in particular that made you say, if there were one podcast in the world, this is the game I'd want to talk about?
For me, it was kind of just the overall experience. Where something about that game, and especially like the ending, where I didn't just feel like I had finished a video game. I felt the same way I did reading like some of those classic novels in some ways, as weird as that sounds, like something where the game ended and I still was like, the wheels were still turning. I was thinking about the possibilities and thinking about what I had done, what the characters had done to get to that point, and how like everything kind of built upon itself. I thought it was it's a very deep game. There's kind of a lot of little things that I sacked for it.
I kind of dawdled. It was like, this is something I'd like to sort of string along for a while. Max, you actually finished well ahead of me.
Purely can't stop playing, really. And I think it was probably 20 to 22 hours, something like that. So compared to your average game that calls itself epic, I thought the length was pretty generous. It was perfect, really.
What about you, Brandon? I didn't even know you were playing it until you published a review.
Well, I am one of those people who normally is like lined up at the GameStop for a Naughty Dog release usually, but Last of Us released while I was at Origins, so I couldn't do that. To be fair, I was not as psyched about it as I might have been, because I feel a little bit, you know, worn out on the zombie genre, which I've never been a huge fan of in the first place. So I was just kind of like, I'll get to it when I get to it. But yeah, once it got all the attention that it got, I moved up that schedule a bit. And once I got a hold of it, a week or so after release, I got through it in a couple days. I mean, it really spit my work days just counting the hours and minutes before I could come home and continue playing and get to the next bit of the story and everything.
This is one of those games where I consistently would start playing around like 8 p.m., think, perfect, it's good timing, I'll play till 10:30, then night after night after night, it was 1 a.m., 2 a.m. I mean, this game kept me up late night after night to the point where I think I'm still recovering sleep.
I had kind of the same experience where I didn't start playing it the first day until like midnight or something, because I just didn't have time. And I'm like, oh, I'll just put a couple hours in. And I put a significant chunk in. I think I got to Pittsburgh before I stopped that night.
Yeah, I stopped. My first session stopped part of the way through Pittsburgh as well. Yeah, it probably took me, all told, maybe 4 days to do, which is not all that impressive considering how I've binged some games in the past. And Christine, you know how I have been.
Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah. Metal Gear Solid 4 and Uncharted 2 both were like finished the day I got them.
For me, there was a certain fear that there would be spoilers, and I guess I should just jump in right now and warn everybody we're probably going to talk about the end of the game. So
yeah,
this was one I wanted to see everything on my own, and spoilers don't usually bother me hugely because I tend to forget them. And then the moment of, it's, oh yeah, somebody did tell me that was going to happen, but this was one, it feels like a very personal story.
I think you're hitting on something that's also kind of key in this game. Everybody kind of got something a little bit different out of the experience of playing. Like, I was talking with another one of Fanboy Comics' senior contributors, Jason Enright, and, like, he and I, like, literally the way we played that game was, like, polar opposite. For a change of pace, I actually was rather stealthy and careful going through. I got kind of this mindset of, I know it's great, right? Never could do that in Metal Gear Solid. I'm the person who goes, you know what, this is taking too long, and I start blowing everybody up. And in Last of Us, I got in that survival mindset, and it became just paramount that I was as careful as possible. And I did that the entire game. I never got frustrated with it. Meanwhile, Jason really latched onto. Onto Ellie, reminded him of a family member and was really passionate about protecting her, and he got kind of vicious. He was killing everybody he could very brutally, and he said some of his logic at times was you know what? I'm not going to shoot this guy, not to save the bullet, but because it's too nice of a death for him.
Like everyone else, I like the Uncharted games. They're great, but I wasn't expecting Game of the Year material, even though that was the talk. I mean, but I really feel like it's the strongest game I've played in a long time. I just wasn't really expecting it, and it also started off pretty slow for me, at least. For the first couple hours, I was kind of worried. I didn't like the beginning section of Boston, and I was thinking, I've spent $60 on another game that's just going to piss me off like Bioshock Infinite did. But pretty much after that short little introduction, it got better and better. Without exception, every section in The Last of Us is better than what came before it, and it holds up pretty much to the end.
I'm curious about everyone's reactions to the ending in general. I finished the game on a Saturday afternoon, and I came away from it incredibly depressed. A lot of the decision-making in The Last of Us is based around what it means to be a parent and what it means to lose children. One of the main characters, Joel, can do almost anything to protect Ellie. The one thing he can't do is lose another child.
Of all the different stereotypes they could have gone with that great sacrifice and curing everything, and everything's going to be very happy. And they didn't do that. Joel made a very human choice, I felt. And he's a character who's only learned how to, all he knows at that point is how to survive, how to potentially keep others alive, and by that point, Ellie is necessary to his survival, and that's why he fights like hell to get her out of there.
I was... I was sort of conflicted about it, because you sort of see it coming by that last action section, you know, what's not going to happen, that things are not going to end saving humanity and everything. I sort of understood what was going on in Joel's head, even if I didn't necessarily agree with him. You know, if this had been like Mass Effect or something, I probably would have said, yes, go ahead.
Most players would, though.
I'll be really sad. Most players are douchebags in those kind of games.
What? No, no, no. If you see like The Walking Dead or Mass Effect statistics, most players are strictly good guys because in a video game, it's easy to be a good guy.
But I remember reading somewhere that the game's directors, Neil Druckmann and Bruce Straley, said they had never heard from a parent who said that they would have made a different decision. Do you think that this was the good guy decision, the choice Joel made? I mean, he essentially sacrificed the future of humanity to keep one person alive, but at the same time, it was the only selfish thing he has done in 20 years. So it's almost like he's got this store of goodwill saved up, and if he's going to blow it, it might as well be a really selfish move.
I wouldn't say that's the only selfish move he's made.
Yeah, I was
going to
say he's basically been a criminal for who knows how long before
he's
this.
He's killed a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, he...
Yeah, but those things mean different stuff in the mushroom-addled future of The Last of Us than they do right now. I mean, I guess another thing that might be worth looking at is whatever Joel did before the plague, he wasn't a gun runner and he wasn't a drug dealer. And then he winds up in this profession, which is also... I thought was curious in that, was that a reaction to some of the earlier tragedies in his life, or was it just something that he'd done to survive right there?
Yeah, that's actually one of the reasons I felt like the first couple hours after the initial prologue were like this tremendous missed opportunity. In some ways, it feels like there's just trappings stuck there to like, because they just had to get the ball rolling somehow. And it doesn't feel like it's doing much story work or character work until you meet Ellie. And I thought they could have used that time much better.
The main thing that I think they accomplished in that first, say, 2 hours of the game, and it was something they needed to accomplish, and I was really glad that they did it, but I'm not sure it needed to be 2 hours. It was established that Joel is not Nathan Drake.
Right.
Yeah.
They're coming off a really popular series that are essentially action comedies, and has a protagonist who that actor actually plays a very interesting character in The Last of Us, but is not the same character. And I felt they really needed to establish that early, or else there's going to be a disconnect throughout the rest of the game.
Throughout a lot of the beginning, just how much are they going to make this guy like their previous protagonist, and appropriately with the setting, they didn't at all. Because he's not initially likable, but you settle into his shoes, and he just starts to work as a character.
Troy Baker did an amazing job with this character. The kind of characters he usually plays are not this grizzled older character. He plays a lot more Nathan Drake style characters, and I would not have guessed it was him if I didn't already know. Same thing for actually Nolan North's voice acting. The character he played, I didn't pick up who he was until near the end of his scenes.
I didn't until the credits. I didn't realize it was Nolan North playing David until the credits. And what you say about Troy Baker is really very true. First of all, this is a fairly young guy. He's in his earlier mid 30s, and he's playing somebody who we're to assume is in his 50s. You're right. Joel wasn't a super likable character. He just was who he was. And some of the decisions he made, especially the way he treats Ellie, it takes him a surprisingly long time to warm up to her, even though she's an incredibly likable person.
You know, I agree. I didn't like all the things Joel was doing, but I think Naughty Dog went the right direction in not giving the player any choice in the matter, especially in regard to the ending. I think that really would have taken something away from it.
One of the things I kind of found fascinating, regarding Joel and Ellie, was, you know, they made this bold decision to set the game 20 years after everything had gone to hell. And the two characters have such different viewpoints as they're kind of going along, Joel having, you know, seen what was before and Ellie kind of growing up with things as they were, which I think somewhat lent her kind of the likability for us. But you can see, you know, Joel's kind of trying to keep his distance from her because he doesn't want to get hurt. And I wasn't really frustrated by it. It kind of made sense to me. I was still waiting for that switch over. What I think kind of surprised me a little bit more was after he had made that connection for his end, and then things had changed so much for Ellie that she was on the other side of the fence where she could not reciprocate, where she was ready to let go, essentially, which I think, again, kind of adds to the depression of it all.
The decision to set the game 20 years after everything goes to hell was – I suspect they spent some time thinking about that, because first of all, it gives you a protagonist who's a lot older than most video game protagonists, in and of itself kind of interesting, but also it lets you deal with another main character who was born after the plague. And some of my favorite exchanges between the two characters were when Ellie was quizzing Joel on aspects of life that were normal before, like coffee shops or why models were so thin. You got this Joel was still uncomfortable sense, and even months after he'd known Ellie, he couldn't answer questions in a way that didn't make her think that he was keeping something from her, which, mm-hmm. given Ellie's personality, just made her push harder. You know, another thought that I had here as far as the 20 years thing is, it let them tell a lot of stories that had ended long ago. That was something that I got caught up in and completely forgot a few times.
Like with the notes and the little documents that were scattered throughout the game?
Exactly.
The attention to detail they put into those, they were fun stories throughout. I also think it gave an opportunity, just like the setting design, like the idea that like vegetation had sort of growing over like these old subdivisions you'd walk through. So it wasn't this, you know, torn up landscape. It was this kind of beautiful environments everywhere, just with these like ruins. It was very, very refreshing to go ahead and skip there and tell the story when they're not immediately, you know, they're not so focused on the immediate day-to-day and the, oh, well, I miss this, this, and this. It's simply, okay, I haven't had, like, hot showers in 20 years. I'm just, we're going to get by. I'm going to focus on more important things.
The apocalypse genre, specifically the sort of zombie or zombie-esque apocalypse genre as a subset, almost always deals with when the crisis happens.
I think the 20 years definitely set that apart, as well as the fact that the infected are not really, though they're similar to zombies, at least at first, the runners are, but they're, the whole fungus angle gives a very different feel to them that I really liked.
I don't know. I don't entirely agree that really changes them enough.
But the thing is, like the other versions, like the clickers and bloaters and such, they felt more monstrous to me than zombie-like. Sure, you said be worried about biting and infection and stuff, but like a clicker. I loved those sequences because I like the tension really did get, you know, did raise because those things were the rules were changed with them as they couldn't see, they would pick up movement, and they were deadly as hell. They weren't, you know, it wasn't quite the zombie situation. And bloaters, that was just, you know, this tough armored monster you pretty much need fire to kill. I really like those kind of changes and like the little things like, hey, we're not, you know, what we're concerned about here is like spores in the air, so everybody's got a gas mask on them. I like those little changes a lot.
The spores thing was good. I felt like clickers were a really big missed opportunity from a design perspective. Because I think they were a good idea, the whole echolocation thing.
Mm-hmm.
To make an enemy that's very different from what we've seen before, either in sort of the genre or in third-person action games, whether they're zombie-oriented or not. But I found in practice, clickers were really, really, really easy to bypass because they couldn't see you. And I was playing on hard. I mean, I was not, like, toning the game down to be able to not have to deal with the clickers. There were times, like, if a clicker runs at you when you're already being swarmed by runners or something and just insta-kills you, that happens, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So they're lethal in that way, but I found that the fact that they... The main thing is that they don't echolocate until you've already tipped them off. Like, I understand from a just, like, making the game not brutal, I understand that sort of decision, but, I mean, you can saunter up to a clicker if you do it quietly enough and just kind of hang out with it for a while. And I felt like they could have been much cooler enemies.
Yeah, I can agree with you that they probably should have been a little bit more sensitive or a little bit more dangerous in some of those ways. But part of me really liked that gameplay decision where, like, during the first sequences back in Boston, when I encountered a clicker, it was a big deal because I hadn't yet really learned all the rules on how to deal with them. And I was still kind of learning it, and they were dangerous. And as the game went on, the clickers and the runners and the, you know, the bloaters and all this stuff, they were less of the problem. It was the human characters I started to fear more, which I kind of went through that progression. You know, we see a lot in those, like, a lot of the zombie apocalypse stories where, hey, the dead aren't the problem. It's the living you have to worry about.
So, Max, you know, you actually, it's a perfect transition because I remember one of your comments when we were talking about The Last of Us on Tap, you made a remark along the lines of, what is it with these games that people descend into this kind of savagery so fast? You know, is that really what would happen? Does anyone else find that unbelievable?
Yeah, the savagery of almost consistently every group of humans you run into. It wasn't really a complaint about the game. You know, it's just frustrating to think sometimes that there's not a little more variety, maybe, with, it just seems like every human except you is, they couldn't be more despicable. Why wouldn't not stapling people to the front of their Jeeps and, you know, get dicks?
I, in comparison to the infected, obviously I do think one of the messages of the game was that people are more dangerous. I'm more on the Christine end of the spectrum when it came to the clickers specifically, because Yeah, I also played on hard, which I don't generally tend to do because I like to finish things, and I actually suck at video games, which is funny given my line of work. But for some reason, I played hard with this one, and I remember specifically about clickers, aside from the fact that that sound they make will haunt me until the day I die, the number of set pieces that they would give you that were very clicker-centric. That there's a scene pretty early in the game where you're in like a subway station underneath a ruined office building. It's very dark, and the whole point of that scene, which took me a couple hours to get past, was to teach you once and for all what clickers are actually capable of.
Yeah, that section I think is sneak. Which at the time was like, yay, I can sneak past them all. And then later I realized, oh, I can just sneak past them all. It isn't as entertaining anymore.
Interesting. So you can complete that scene without killing all of the infected down there. So I thought part of the point of that scene is you're clearing a path for Cass and Ellie.
I killed, I think I only wound up killing two or three of them. I was a very big fan of throwing bottles to distract at that point. And I mean, it took me probably 50 tries to the point where the game finally said, dude, you can change the difficulty at any time in this game. It was also at that scene that I found myself wondering, I wonder if these people are still alive. Because, you know, usually with your zombie situations, you've got The Walking Dead. These things aren't dead. These things are infected by a parasite. Do you think there are still people in there?
I think that's a really, really great point. That was something that also hit me hard. Like, with The Walking Dead and, like, normal zombie fiction, whenever that question came up, I'm like, no, they're dead. No big deal. But especially with the, spoilers, the Henry and Sam scene.
Yeah.
Raised a lot of questions regarding that for me, and it almost seems like, at least at the runner stage, they are still alive, and they're just kind of going mad before kind of the fungus takes over more, which is a very, very terrible thought.
There's a sound design message in that. I just, the sounds that they made, clickers made this creepy clicking sound, obviously, but the runners made sounds like they were either having sex or they were in a lot of pain. And I found it disturbing, and it did get me thinking, especially because here you are midway through the game, you've met Henry and Sam, they're these two people who obviously everybody knew that it was going to end badly with them, but I didn't know what was going to happen. So to Max's point about why can't there be a few more middle-of-the-road people, all the human characters existed either to be killed by you or to be good like you and die horribly. I wonder if there were parts that they wound up leaving on the cutting room floor that dealt with some of this stuff.
I'd be very interested to know what kind of stuff they cut out of a game like this.
Well, that comes up to a question I actually wanted to discuss. What do you all think they're going to add in terms of, like, we've been told there's going to be actual story DLC for this game. Do you have any theories what holes they're going to fill in?
I'd like to see more with David as a character, because he was really the only NPC in the game who actually had me fooled. Two other choices that seem most evident to me would be The Adventures of Henry and Sam or Marlene's trip across the country with the Fireflies. Seem both like really good plot points that could be fleshed out more.
I agree that there's certainly some of the characters you mentioned, Matt. They could tell some prequel stories, I think, as well. They could fill in some of that 20 years for Joel and or Tess as well, which I would be kind of interested in seeing.
They've set the bar pretty high. It's tough to do the right story in DLC form because it can very easily be underwhelming. I do think more Sam and Henry would be interesting. But on the flip side of that, we all know how their story ends already, so it kind of takes something out of that. And I agree with you all. I definitely wouldn't want to see like a continuation of the end game. And I really wouldn't like to see like what Joel was doing before either, because it's probably just him playing poker for ration cards and then eating and drinking. So that would suck. I guess the kind of surprise choice might be, oh, do something Ellie. But again, it might underwhelm because of what we got.
It should be a crossover DLC that confirms that The Last of Us world is in fact also the Uncharted world. And so it's Nathan Drake in the 20 years later timeline doing whatever he's up to at this point in the fungal apocalypse.
If they have any balls at all, they'll abandon The Last of Us completely, and the DLC will be a gamification of the Savage Starlight comic book.
Yes! I agree with all of you in terms of I don't want there to be any more of Joel and Ellie's story, because I mean, even to the last lines between them, it's perfect. I was thinking in terms of filling in some of those other stories, like what Matt was saying, but Max, you make a really good point about we know how all the stories end. Like, all the characters, I was thinking, oh, cool, they could like tell a little bit more of a test story, or Marlene or somebody. It's like, yeah, we know that spoilers, they are all dead. And that's a little, again, depressing. And
well, but that's not always a huge problem. It sort of depends on how their story ends. With characters like Marlene or Tess, who kind of had all very stereotypical sort of action deaths, killed because you're kind of the villain, or self-sacrifice because you're screwed anyway. You know, I think there's still a lot that could be explored with those kind of characters, because the manner in which they died wasn't like defining for their story.
I found myself really curious throughout most of the game. I guess curious about things that would not make very interesting game stuff, which is probably why it won't be DLC and probably why they didn't put it in the game to begin with. But sure, we know why in general Joel acts the way he does, but things like the specifics of his relationship with Tess. I found myself mentally constructing fiction around these things. Like, there's this semi-adversarial thing, but there's obviously an implication that at the very least they're close, to whatever degree Joel is able to be close to people. That's what made me wonder, which I guess is a sign of a well-written piece of fiction.
Mm-hmm. Kind of going away from characters for a moment, there was a question I kind of wanted to ask regarding gameplay, get everybody else's impressions. Of course, The Last of Us has that kind of unique thing where ammo and supplies are kind of rare, and it was a game that kind of relied on you to have to switch weapons and make use of everything in your inventory, really being careful in terms of how you were upgrading your weapons and kind of moving along the game. How did you all feel about that kind of resource management aspect of the game and the fighting?
I like the idea better than the execution. Mm-hmm. This is certainly not the first game that's tried it. You know, it used to be a hallmark of like Resident Evil and stuff like that in the older games. Though ammo was frequently something I had to kind of keep track of somewhat, after about the midway point of the game, I was passing up other supplies because I couldn't hold them.
What?
Yeah.
Brandon is considerably better at video games than I am.
I think I know what my problem was, and I freely admit this, I'm an idiot. I didn't know you could upgrade Joel, increase his health bars or his listening range, that kind of thing.
I never did that stuff.
You never did it either?
I did not buy the health or listening upgrades because I didn't feel like they were useful.
Like, really?
What did you buy out of curiosity?
Well, the first thing you have to buy, unless you are dense, is the ability to shiv counter clickers.
Disagree.
That's like, I felt like the critical one in that tree, because clickers just own you so quickly with the insta-kills otherwise. A lot of Joel's other upgrades I felt like were kind of just extra. Like, I spent some supplements, but I can't even tell you on what anymore. I never upgraded my health.
You're a weird person.
I noticed the upgrade system, and then I was trying to wait patiently for the tutorial to introduce it, and it never did. And then I forgot about it until I finished the game.
You know, when we started this, my big concern was I knew we all liked the game, so I was afraid we'd all just sit here agreeing with each other, and it turns out we're wildly different people, because obviously the smart path to upgrade Joel is to improve his health and hearing radius first.
No, it's the gun aiming, you fools.
I found the weapon upgrade system much more useful than the Joel upgrade system. I felt like more than a lot of games, I actually like really noticed that the difference, and so that I was a lot more on board with, and really like thinking about what I was spending my parts on, and felt like it was improving my survivability in ways that upgrading Joel just never really did for me.
I felt it was almost as well balanced as any effort I've seen to do something like this. There was never there were a few points, but there were never lengthy periods in the game when I felt like I had everything I wanted. There's always something that you choose not to upgrade in favor of an alternative.
I stared at that screen several times when I was at a workbench just thinking. You were never able to be totally comfortable with all your weapons, at least the first time you play. It's certainly not a game where you're just going to easily upgrade everything and blow your way out of whatever situation. It was pretty well balanced, I thought.
I mean, despite my experience being maybe less tense with the survival elements and stuff than some people's, I feel like it is one of the better implementations of that idea in a game.
And I'll break my own rule where I jotted down maybe will be the first discussion of The Last of Us to not discuss winter. But in a lot of ways for me, and I think for most people, the winter segment was the climax of the game. As winter ended, I thought, you know, if they rolled the credits right now, that would be abrupt, but I could live with it.
We got that cliffhanger at the end of the fall section, and I had to know what was going to happen next. There was no way I was going to put down the controller. And I really loved that we got a chance to play as Ellie, because I love that The Last of Us wasn't afraid to pass off who was the protagonist. Like, the game actually starts with Sarah, goes to Joel, then we get, you know, Ellie gets a couple of times where she's in kind of in charge. And I felt they did a great job of making her feel different than Joel. You know, she couldn't just walk up and start meleeing somebody. She just didn't have the strength or size for it. But if she got jumped on somebody's back, she could stab the hell out of them. And it was really kind of a time of, like, watching that character grow where, you know, she was the one who had to take care of Joel. And she went from, you know, again, this optimist to kind of being, you know, torn up a bit. Some physically just from getting, you know, beaten around, but a lot more emotionally and mentally, just realizing how cruel the world can be. I really, really loved that, loved winter. It's probably my favorite season because of how they did the entire thing, where they also didn't fall into the trope of, okay, Ellie's captured, Joel will come rescue her. Well, they did do part of that, but we got, you know, Ellie was still the sort of character who could go save herself, which I really appreciated.
The end of winter, I think Naughty Dog has really good writers, and it would have been lazy, bad, sloppy writing if Joel had just gone and rescued Ellie. One of the things I appreciated the most was Ellie did not need rescuing. She had the situation well in hand by the time Joel arrived. She needed Joel, but for reasons that had nothing to do with the typical kind of rescuing you assume is going to be in a video game. So I really appreciated the way they did that, because Ellie was always presented as perfectly capable of taking care of herself. The fact that she had dealt with the threat very well by that point and was freaking out for other reasons, I thought was very deftly handled, because it wound up being one of the more disturbing video game moments that I can remember. And this is coming off of Deadly Premonition.
I really liked Winter as well. It was my favorite chunk of the game. As sort of supporting characters went, David was about as interesting as they got. I certainly was more interested in him even before he turned out to be a douchebag than I had been in, like, Henry and Sam or something as other people in this world.
It's funny. I'm playing Tomb Raider right now. I was reminded of the big scandal where some just really sublimely retarded PR person at Crystal Dynamics sounded really a little too gleeful when talking about this sort of potential moment of the threat of sexual violence at the beginning of Tomb Raider and how everyone reacted. And I think it was more the way that person framed it than the fact that such a thing might have been in a video game.
It was completely that. I was actually, I had reservations about picking up the game because of that whole controversy. And like, when I sat down and played Tomb Raider, I was waiting every scene for the, okay, when are they going to make a rape joke? When are they, you know, like, oh, a bunch of lonely guys on an island type joke or something? Or when are they going to threaten Laura in that way? And even, like, that scene, it's not really about that.
I kept wondering if they had changed that part of the game. And there were some times that I was like, what was that what they were talking about? Really?
stuff like that is dangerous territory when you're putting together a story. And if you're going to use it, know what you're doing, I guess, is really the lesson to take from that.
It was very, pleasantly surprising to first take over as Ellie. Immediately moving around as her, it just felt perfect. It was a little different from Joel, but you were still playing the exact same game with the same controls. That whole opening scene with her was fantastic. I played it pretty slowly. I probably didn't even run into David and his pal for probably 20 minutes. I mean, I was just wandering around looking for that animal with four legs that I forget the name of.
Deer, I think, is the word you're looking for.
It was a really big deer. It was like a super deer or something. I had an interesting experience, actually. The first time I died playing as Ellie, the screen went black, and I didn't see Ellie die, and I thought, that's interesting, because I was curious, like, would they show her get gruesomely maimed? You know, specifically...
They would.
Well, I thought they didn't, because my screen went black, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. Because I remember, again, on Tomb Raider, I'd watched some Let's Play videos of it, specifically saw some of the death scenes in that game, and they were insane. They were pretty sickening, some of them. And I thought it was interesting to not show Ellie being torn apart. But then the next time I died as her, there was a clicker eating her neck. So I thought, oh, okay, it was my PS3 just glitched or something. But it had me intrigued for a moment.
That's weird, like, cosmic timing. All the deaths are so brutal. And yeah, if the first time it went to black with Ellie, it would be...
Yeah, it never happened again. I saw her get eaten probably 50 times after that. Not quite Dark Souls territory for you, but yes. I'm curious if you all noticed something that I noticed. It took me a good while to notice, but just wondering if you all discovered the, I guess, the subtle hint navigation system. Because most areas you go into in the game are fairly open, and you know there's no arrows pointing you in this direction or that. But I'm just curious if you all picked up on go here.
Not me.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no for me either.
Okay, so just try to picture some. If you picture some parts of the game, just think of the color yellow. And how often you see that in the game. When you go through it again, pretty much almost every single climb this, go through here, you know, hop over that, whatever, almost every situation, with a few exceptions for good reason, have some little piece of yellow landscape somewhere. And I, on the second time through, I thought it was a really clever way of guiding players, probably without them noticing it. I didn't notice it until the game was half over.
That kind of subtlety is good design. I never reacted well to the complaints about it, that the story is great, but it's not a very innovative game. I guess I don't know where it's written that a game that innovates in one thing is bad because it doesn't innovate in another. I thought as a third-person game goes, it was more than adequate, and you know, maybe not groundbreaking there, but really good, which is more than I could say for BioShock Infinite, which also had a great storyline and script and plot, but broke down in terms of the gameplay. At best, it was competent, and here you had one that I thought was really well done.
It certainly wasn't groundbreaking. I wouldn't fault it personally for being, like you say, it's more than adequate. Sure, there's nothing in it revolutionary. Gameplay-wise, but it just felt like a really, really strong effort from a veteran developer who know what they're doing. It's like Sonic Youth's 15th album. It's not going to be the thing that blows your mind, but you know, it's a bunch of vets, and they know what they're doing, and they're pretty good at it. I do think it's interesting how we talked for quite a while, and we didn't even have to get on the topic of how good the game looks. I think it's just, that's like a given. That's a, you know, that is one worthwhile comment in close.
It's pretty.
It looks really good.
The only post-apocalyptic game I've ever seen that really, really made the end of the world a lot more beautiful than you'd think it would be.
It makes you realize it's not so much the end of the world, but just that the world's doing just fine.